This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second in our series of Countdown to COP26 on LGIM Talks. I'm Michelle Scrimger. I'm the CEO of LGIM, and I'm also privileged to be co-chairing the COP26 Business Leaders Group. You may have heard us say that climate change is the greatest systemic risk that we face today. And for me, this upcoming summit is not only about how we progress the climate change narrative, it's how we really make sure that we're part of that narrative, and that part of that narrative is about how we protect our oceans and our natural habitats. So before I head to Glasgow, who better to reinforce our message that climate change is coming and inaction is not an option than LGIM's global partner and the UN patron of the oceans, Lewis Pugh. And Lewis, it's just fantastic to see you and welcome to LGIM Talks.
Michelle, thank you so much.
Can we just start by focusing on your most recent and I think your most challenging endurance swim to date? I think just over a month ago, you completed it in Greenland. And I was thinking about this and how you have to prepare physically for a swim like that. How do you prepare mentally?
Thank you. Yes, I mean, it was without a shadow of a doubt the toughest swim I've ever done in my career. So it was 12 days of swimming and the water was 0 degrees on many of the days. So I was swimming twice a day, morning and afternoon. And when you get into 0 degrees, it's a big shock to the system. Mm. So the preparation, which I did, was over a year. And there were two aspects to the preparation. Number one, trying to get my stroke as good and as efficient as possible. So swimming is the only sport in the whole world which operates on three axes. So your head moves left to right, your arms move around and around, your legs move up and down. And if any of those are not in sync, you're going to be fighting the sea. So making sure that my stroke was as efficient as possible was the first part. But the second part was obviously getting acclimatized to swimming in extreme cold conditions. So the final part of the training was swimming in a river in Iceland, which was unbelievably cold.
Oh gosh.
Early in the morning, it was unbelievable, but it did get me prepared. But nothing quite prepares you from when the moment you arrive in Greenland and you see the scale of Greenland and how cold and hostile the water is.
I mean, that's quite something. And actually, I'm trying to imagine what that must feel like. And Lewis, you've done this a couple of times. I think it's amazing what you do. But what continues to shock you?
When we arrived in Greenland, I think what shocked me was what's happening to the environment there.
Right, okay.
I've spent the last 18 years in the polar regions, both in the Arctic and in the Antarctic. And I'm witnessing the enormous changes which are taking place right now. But in Greenland, it was on another level altogether. So I went to a place called the Ilulissat Glacier. That's now the fastest moving glacier in the world. It's moving at a speed of 40 meters per day.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's truly unbelievable. But when we arrived in Greenland, the thing that is most shocking is all these what we call supraglacial lakes. So these are lakes which are appearing on top of the ice sheet, freshwater lakes. And what happens is the water in these lakes drills down through the ice sheet all the way to the bedrock and then lubricates that bedrock, making the ice sheet unstable. So not only in Greenland where we're seeing enormous fast-moving glacier, we're seeing the supraglacial lakes. And then this year was actually the first time in recorded history that they had rain on the highest mountain in Greenland. So you put all these things together, what I'm finding shocking, the speed and the scale of the climate crisis. If the Greenland ice sheet melts, it's a 7 meter sea level rise.
You know, I was going to ask you about, so if we wanted to understand more about why this is urgent and why it really matters, why we should be concerned about what's happening to polar ice cap. I mean, that's the answer right there, isn't it?
It's sea level rise, but also what happens is ice is essential for life on Earth. So the ice in the polar regions, the ice on the top of the mountains and the Himalayas and the Andes, etc., it keeps our planet cool. It keeps the planet within a temperature range in which we can live. Now as this ice is disappearing, temperatures are rising in the world. I always say to world leaders, no ice, no life. And it's also essential for many animal species. You think of an animal like the polar bear. Polar bears rely on ice to hunt. Without ice, they have a very bleak future. Ice also stores water. So
yes.
In the mountains of the world, you think of the Himalayas. The Himalayas provide a constant water supply to India, China, Pakistan, Bangladesh, all these countries. And that water is essential for everything. It's essential for drinking. It's essential for agriculture, for industry, for producing energy. Water is essential for life on Earth as well.
We can see that in Europe with what's happening to glaciers as well. I mean, it's to have experienced that firsthand, Lewis, is quite extraordinary. And I guess I'm really fascinated with your campaign, the 30 by 30 campaign. So you're calling for 30% of the world's oceans to be protected by 2030. And as I understand it, only 2% are fully protected right now. So when you talk about that, what do you mean? And how can that help to heal the environment?
So what I'm talking about is what we call marine protected areas. So these are akin to national parks. So we all know what national parks are. It's areas on land which are protected from human activity. Now what we're trying to do is we're trying to create them in the oceans. And as you mentioned, about 2% of the world's oceans are fully protected, and that's woefully inadequate. Scientists have been calling for at least 30% to be protected. But the range of protection is also important. I want you to imagine on land in a national park, let's say like Dartmoor National Park, where you have lots of activity taking place. The Royal Marines will maybe do a military exercise. You have cars driving through there. You have farming. And you compare that to, let's say, something in the Serengeti, which is a fully functional biodiverse area in Africa. The range of protection is so very, very different. What we're trying to create in the oceans now is akin to the Serengeti National Park. So no drilling for oil, no drilling for gas, no large-scale industrial fishing fleets coming through there, no military doing exercises, allowing nature to recover. And when you allow nature to recover, the results are incredible. The wildlife rebounds. And we need that now. In just my lifetime, we've lost nearly 70% of the world's wildlife. It's a deeply shocking statistic. And so marine protected areas and national parks are essential now to restore the health of our planet.
As you talk about it, and as you think of those statistics, and, you know, we were talking earlier on, chillingly, Dame Ellen MacArthur has done some research, and I think it's by 2050, it could be more plastic than fish in our oceans. I mean, that's just frightening. What more do we need to do to stop that from happening?
Yeah, I don't know what makes me more upset, whether it's so little fish or so much plastic, but either way, it's a chilling statistic. So when it comes to how little fish there now is in the ocean, the obvious solution is we need to be creating marine protected areas to restore and replenish the world's oceans. And we need to stop this serious overfishing, which is taking place endemic around the world. When it comes to plastic pollution, we've got to do everything to stop plastic getting into the rivers of the world. Because once it gets into the rivers, gets into the ocean, birds eat it and die. You see these horrific images of whales which have eaten plastic and then have died. It's having a horrible impact on the environment. I was doing a big beach cleanup in India a couple of years ago, and the plastic pollution was literally up to our shoulders on this beach in Mumbai. So I think the most important thing is to be very conscious about what is getting into our rivers and also to avoid single-use plastic. There's so much plastic which we're using today which we don't need to use. And the idea of using one piece of plastic just once, and then it goes onto a landfill, or even worse, goes into a river, goes into the ocean. We've got to tackle this.
And I agree.
Michelle, you've heard from me a little bit about what I stand for and what my message will be at COP26. What will you be asking from those who you meet at COP26 as an outcome for your group and the financial services industry as a whole?
Lewis, thanks. I mean, look, it's... First of all, looking forward very much to being there. I mean, the reality is COP26 comes at an important moment. If you think about it, a pivotal moment, given what we know needs to happen in the next decade if we're going to achieve net zero. And I'd want to recognise that actually there has been, businesses have made progress. They've made some progress in the run-up to COP, but we absolutely know that this is really only the start, and that the change that's required is urgent. So I think when I look at where we, you know, where we are and what needs to happen, you know, COP26 is a moment in time. It's a very important moment in time. I think as we come away from COP, hopefully with some real clear decisions and actions that are agreed, it's about the steps that we continue to take. It's the action we take. It's moving from pledging to doing. It's ensuring that the collaboration that I have seen across business and actually across government as well globally, that continues. And that we make sure that we get the focus and the commitment and that we're taking action. When I look at our business and I look at asset management and the role that we play, I mean, actually we talk about creating a better future through responsible investing at LGIM. And I really believe that we have an important role to play in working with our clients to transition our portfolios, and so that we can all play our part in tackling climate change, because we all need to play our part. This is absolutely something that everybody needs to get behind. It is wholesale change that's needed, and listening to you just reinforces that for me. Actually, it touches all of our lives. And actually, this is maybe a good way to maybe ask you my final question. We've talked about some really important, unbelievably critical things that need to change. What about the small things, the more routine things daily that you've changed or that we can think about changing?
Yeah, thank you. I always think that every single purchase which we make is a decision about our future and a decision about our children's future, whether that be the food we eat, the clothes we wear, how we get to work, how we take our children to school, what we invest any funds in. All these decisions are a decision about our future. So the brands which we support make an enormous difference, and the people that we vote for as well make an enormous difference. We see some political leaders who are very committed to fighting the climate crisis, and others who still need to be persuaded. But we, as ordinary members of the public, can make such a difference by being conscious of what we are purchasing on a daily basis and who we also vote for. In my case, I'm very much focused recently on food. So because I've seen what's happened in the world's oceans and seeing just how little fish there are, I now don't eat seafood. I also don't eat beef. Beef has become, it has a really, really harmful impact on the environment. So I'm eating a lot more, a larger plant-based diet. And then I'm also conscious about consumption, buying less. And what I do purchase, I try and purchase stuff which is going to last. I think those two big things in my life are important.
Lewis, it's a really great way to end the conversation. I wish we had more time. I want to say again, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. We really are proud to work alongside you and support you and the efforts that you're making to raise awareness of the climate crisis, and to do that in such an impactful way. I'm looking forward to continuing to work alongside you, and LGIM is really proud to support you. I know it's a daunting challenge. It really is a daunting challenge. But I am an optimist. I've always been an optimist. I really believe that if we make the changes that you're talking about, if we jointly push and raise the awareness of that climate narrative, I think we can make net zero a reality. But for now, everybody, and thank you to Lewis. Thank you so much, and thank you for joining LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and general investment management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgim.com.